We've certainly seen it with overtraining. And in, you know, some really amazing cases, I've gotten messages from people and they've told me that Whoop saved their life because they saw something going on in their data that just didn't make any sense. And they went to go see a doctor and it turned out they were going to have a heart attack or they had a stroke. Like, it's pretty amazing what measuring your body will reveal.
First of all, Will, thank you very much for coming down. I know you're a very busy man, so I appreciate the time you've taken out today. And secondly, congratulations for the creation of this. I've been wearing it for 18 months now, and it literally has not come off my wrist. So, well done indeed. What was the earlier days like for you when you were at school and at university?
Well, Mike, first of all, thanks for having me. Big fan of your podcast, and thanks for being on Whoop. You know, I got into this space because I was really interested in sports and exercise. I was an athlete growing up, played a bunch of different sports. I went to Harvard where I played squash, and it's a fairly cardiovascular sport. I was someone who used to overtrain almost every season. So I got very interested in what can you measure about the human body to better understand training, to better understand performance? What does it mean to train optimally? What does it mean to peak on a given day? And through that process, I did an enormous amount of physiology research. I read something like 500 medical papers in school. And I ultimately wrote a paper myself around how I thought you could continuously measure the human body. And looking back on it, that really became the business plan for Whoop, the blueprint of, okay, if we could actually measure all of these things and provide data to you, we would be able to create a platform that could help humans optimize performance and ultimately improve their health. And that was 10 years ago. So I founded Whoop my senior year at Harvard, and I've been building the company ever since.
That's crazy, because I know a lot of people when they go to university, including myself, they have no real idea of what it is that they want to do. But it sounds like the moment you went to Harvard, you just knew what it was that you were going to do.
Yes and no. I think my subconscious was constantly thinking about this idea. So for aspiring entrepreneurs out there, the things that you think about in the shower or before bed, you know, the quiet moments of the day, I think those are important things that are sort of calling to you. And for me in building Whoop, like since I was 18 years old, those were the whispers in my mind, like, you know, thinking about physiology, thinking about the human body, thinking about building technology. At the same time, I really had no idea what it meant to start a company. And I had never started a company before. I didn't know anything about building a team, raising capital, even building technology. And so I was trying to build the confidence to ultimately start a company. And the way I did that was just a relentless amount of work. I read hundreds of medical papers. I didn't read one medical paper. I met with an enormous number of coaches and athletes. I took classes at various business schools to even learn, if you had an idea, how do you turn that into a business plan? And so through this very rigorous process of work, I got comfortable with the idea of starting a company. But I really became an entrepreneur before I even knew what an entrepreneur was. Mm. Like, and I say to people, if you're nervous, be more prepared. And so that's really what I tried to do, was just be as prepared as possible for taking this leap.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I have.
So there was, you seem to have managed to eliminate any of the distractions which a lot of people face when at university. So when it came to like women or the parties, did you just ignore it and focus completely on what it was?
No, I was a college student. I mean, I definitely was burning it on both ends, which is, I think, also why I inevitably overtrained as an athlete. And it also comes back to my own misconceptions about my own body. Part of the reason that I overtrained was that I didn't realize sleep was all that important. Part of the reason I overtrained was that I assumed if you went out drinking one night, you were hungover the next day, but you were fine the following day. It never occurred to me that these things had like long lingering effects in your body. So I think that being a college, you know, being a student athlete actually pushed me into this whole category of understanding lifestyle and understanding performance. The big insight I had in founding Whoop was that understanding the other 20 hours of the day is as important as understanding a period of time when you exercise. There was such an overemphasis 10, 12 years ago on exercise as it came to performance. And no one was talking about recovery. And it occurred to me, what if the other 20 hours of the day were as important, if not more important, to your body's state of being and ultimately performance? So that was the insight at the time that was counterintuitive that, you know, led to a lot of our success with Whoop. Because today Whoop, I would say one of the core things that we introduced to the market first and have become well known for is this idea of recovery.
Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to picture you at Harvard. You have the idea. You kind of know what it is that you want to start. I'm guessing you needed the hardware. So the first prototype you developed, was it a strap? And how did that come about?
So you have to take even one step backwards from that. I realized from the physiology research, we needed a way to measure heart rate and heart rate variability continuously. And up to that point, really the only way to measure heart rate was with a chest strap. And the only way to measure heart rate variability was with an electrocardiogram. Mm-hmm. So chest strap, very uncomfortable technology you wear around your chest almost exclusively during exercise. So that's not going to give you 24/7 data. And electrocardiograms, I mean, that's like a $20,000 piece of medical technology in a hospital. So I'm asking myself, how can we take that technology and put it into a smaller form factor? And I started meeting with lots of different students at Harvard who are engineers and batting this idea around. And ultimately, we settled on using photoplethysmography, which is a sophisticated technique using light to ultimately shine underneath your skin and be able to accurately measure heart rate and heart rate variability. But Whoop was the first piece of hardware that ultimately could measure heart rate variability continuously. And I think we achieved that for two reasons. One was that we really focused on collecting an enormous amount of data. So other products that were early to the market, like Fitbit, Nike Fuel Band, Jawbone, products like that, they weren't as focused on data collection. They were more focused on like a very simple insight. Oh, you walked 10,000 steps today. Yeah. Whereas we were much more focused on how can we measure something about the human body that's ultimately medical grade, but present it to you in a consumer form factor. The second reason that we, I think, were able to build this technology is we've just always had world-class algorithms, teams, and engineers. And some of that goes back to starting the company at Harvard and having students from MIT and Harvard. Some of it goes back to the advisors we had. Some of it goes back to just being insanely focused on that problem.
Mm-hmm. So you had the prototype, you had the piece of hardware. How did you go about actually getting your first few users and getting the word out there, telling everyone, okay, you need this. If you want to improve your recovery, you want to know more about your strain, you want to perform at your best, this is what you need. How did you go about growing the company to begin with?
Yeah, I would say, so we really started working in 2012, summer of 2012 on it full time. I had just graduated from Harvard. And the first 2.5 years were dedicated to taking what was a pretty cumbersome prototype. And when I say cumbersome, I mean cumbersome. Like, it was a large box, probably about the size of my head, that had a switch on it. And then it had wires coming off of it, one that attached to a kind of a rubber looking thing that went on your wrist, and the other that would attach like directly into a computer. Mm-hmm. So like we're talking big apparatus. When I traveled with this in through an airport, it didn't go super well. Okay, let's put it that way. And we had to figure out how we were going to take this large apparatus, which, mind you, could measure heart rate variability and could also measure heart rate during motion. Those were two pretty meaningful and significant breakthroughs in like 2013 timeframe. Mm-hmm. But it looked ridiculous and it wasn't something people could really wear. So we had to figure out how we were going to take that and put it into at least a smaller form factor. The idea that we could get it to be this size was unthinkable at the time, but have it be something that's a little bit sportier, a little bit smaller. And we achieved that by 2014. And at that time frame, we maybe had, on the order of hundreds of users. Now, two of our first 100 users happened to be LeBron James and Michael Phelps. So we did start at the tip of the pyramid. And we can talk about how you get to, you know, athletes of that level. I think a lot of it, at the time was that we were focused on professional athletes because we felt like they needed sleep and recovery data the most. And we were offering something that no one else in the market was offering. So if it worked, it was going to have a huge impact on even the highest performing people.
Yeah, I think if I'd heard of something like that on the market and I was a professional sports person, I'd be like, I want to try that out for sure. So I guess, yeah, that explains how to begin with it did really well. Is there anything at the moment with the Whoop strap which you would really like to track, but the technology currently doesn't allow you to do that?
I think in the long run, health monitoring should be able to measure almost everything that's in a doctor's office. You know, it's essentially moving from large, cumbersome, antiquated medical equipment to small, smart, sophisticated, easy to wear, continuous technology. Mm-hmm. And without going into too much detail on what we're working on, that's the evolution for the technology. It's worth noting, and we've spent a lot of time talking about the hardware. I think what ultimately has made Whoop a successful company is that we've developed an overall experience that allows individuals to change their behavior and improve their health. Like if you think about it in terms of layers of difficulty, the base level is like you create something that measures data about your body. The layer above that is you create something that measures data about your body that's super accurate. Okay, that's actually a big leap. A lot of people were here. Not many people got to the accurate stage. Then another layer is you build something that measures data accurately that people like wearing. You know, one of the things that's unique about Whoop is it's actually very comfortable. Yeah. It's also somewhat stylish, if I may, because you can really like customize. You can customize the band, right? You can swap in and out all sorts of different bands. You can do all sorts of different colors. It actually comes in 70,000 different looks and feels, well, yeah, which if you think about it, is the most customizable wearable on the market. Mm-hmm. The layer above having it be something that people are willing to wear and collects accurate data is actually making sense of all that information. And Whoop summarizes your life, as you know, in terms of sleep, recovery, strain. So yes, we can collect 100 megabytes of data on you a day, but not throw all that at you, give you a few simple numbers. And then if you want to peel back the onion, you can go deeper. And if you want to peel back the onion, you can go deeper and deeper. And so we present information in layers. And then the last, and I think the most important piece of that pyramid of difficulty is you've created then scores. Can you create coaching that helps people really understand, so what? Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And for Whoop to be able to tell you, okay, this is how alcohol affects your body, or this is when you should go to bed, or this is the type of workout you should do today. It should be really hard, or maybe today you need to rest. That level of, I think, actionable, prescriptive feedback is what has, I think, fortunately made Whoop, a very useful product and a product that now has a very loyal user base.
I almost see it as a coach, which is telling me the things which I should and shouldn't do.
Like, yeah.
I have learned so much about my body, and I can almost now predict what my sleep and recovery is going to be based on what I have done that day or what I've consumed. So say, for example, these are the things which I basically stopped doing. I've cut down alcohol intake massively.
Yeah.
Because I can tell even maybe just having 3 drinks or more, my HRV goes down so much and I'm almost always in the red. I've noticed smoking shisha, because that's quite a big thing in Dubai.
Yeah, for sure.
When I smoke shisha and try to go to bed, my heart rate is elevated by quite a bit.
Yeah, probably nicotine.
The
right?
nicotine. And then even the respiratory rate is higher than usual.
Yeah, for sure.
And then obviously with caffeine. So if I think I'm generally pretty sensitive to caffeine anyway, but if I have a coffee too late on, or even if I had like 2 Diet Cokes in an evening, that is going to negatively affect my sleep as well. So all of these things I'm now basically either not doing or not consuming because I want to get the best score possible the next day. Like I'm always just like, yeah, okay, I want to be in the green. I want to be in the green. And I know it's not possible to always be in the green, because if you're training hard and you've been doing consecutive days of hard training, then ultimately I do notice the recovery will gradually start to go down to the point where after 3 consecutive days of training, that is when I will have a rest day on the 4th day. So I allow my body to recover. And then usually after that 4th day, the rest day, I'm back in the green again.
Yeah.
So it's like a cycle each week.
That means you're also training very effectively.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, the way you describe that is really what we love to hear. You've been able to create, using Whoop data, a recipe for your performance. Yeah. Like, here's what Mike needs to do to perform optimally. And I don't think that needs to be a black box for people. You know, so many people are going through their lives just waking up and having no idea what's going on inside their body.
Mm-hmm.
In a weird way, COVID-19, I think, underscored this for a lot of people, because the whole COVID-19 pandemic demonstrated that you could have a virus without feeling it.
Yeah.
And one of the principles in founding Whoop was that feelings are overrated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't necessarily always feel what's going on in your body. You don't necessarily know how certain things you put in your body affect your body. And this idea that you could get a virus and give it to a loved one, not even know you were sick, and then the loved one gets very sick. That's a weird psychological phenomenon, right? That society then had to wrestle with. And for Whoop, by being able to measure certain things about your body, we can help you understand what's really going on. You can only really manage what you measure. And so I love to hear the way you describe that.
It's interesting as well. There would, for no explanation whatsoever, I might wake up and I have a really bad recovery. My HRV has been really low and it doesn't make any sense. And then literally 12 hours later, I would start to feel terrible. Like I would start feeling ill.
Yeah.
So it's crazy how it is actually almost predicted that, okay, you're getting ill now. You've caught something. You know, even though you wake up, you feel fine, 12 hours later, you're like, bam. And you're like, oh, wow, okay, that makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah, we had people who had COVID and they felt fine, but their Whoop data was totally screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was screwed up, they went and got tested and all of a sudden realized they had COVID. We've certainly seen it with overtraining. And in, you know, some really amazing cases, I've gotten messages from people and they've told me that Whoop saved their life because they saw something going on in their data that just didn't make any sense. And they went to go see a doctor and it turned out they were going to have a heart attack or they had a stroke. Like, it's pretty amazing what measuring your body will reveal.
Yeah. When it comes to tracking calories burned, I've always been fascinated by this. And I still, this is just my opinion, I don't think there is anything out there yet that can like 100% exactly calculate how many calories you burned when you're doing activity. I think particularly when it comes to this type of training I do, weight training. So I've noticed with Whoop, sometimes I believe it underestimates how many calories which I burn.
Yeah.
Because it's obviously it's going by what my heart rate is telling the app. So there'll be periods where it's really high, but then it goes right back down again.
Sure.
And then really high and then back down again. So it's almost like if I was to do cardio, I feel like it's a little bit more accurate in terms of the calories burned. But with the weight training, it's a little bit different. Have you noticed that when it comes to, I don't know what formula you guys use, but is it difficult to try and track how many calories you actually burn?
I would say in general, calories is one of the hardest things to track. And there aren't even fully agreed upon methods of how to track calories, like if you had all of the appropriate equipment. Whoop does about as good a job as you can of this because we measure heart rate and movement so accurately and we use a combination of those metrics. I will say that we have a couple updates coming to our weightlifting experience.
That's good news.
So we recently acquired a company about a little over a year ago called Push, which developed really sophisticated algorithms for measuring everything about your movement during weightlifting. In particular, they really understood velocity-based training. So essentially understanding the speed with which you're lifting a weight. If you lift a weight really fast versus really slow, that's going to have a different effect on your body. Mm-hmm. And so we're coming out with a whole suite of features around weightlifting, and essentially will give you the ability to use the sensor to measure everything about the weightlifting experience. So the rate at which you're pulling reps, there's going to be a whole weightlifting tracking component to the app. So you can actually put in all of your information. So everything that you've lifted, and you'll be able to create a whole library around it. So it's a pretty exciting feature that's coming out very soon.
I have a request, but I know you guys, you've stated on the website why you don't do it. Why don't you track steps?
So we've had this opinion for a long time, even dating back to the founding of the company. Steps does not give you a very deep understanding of your own body. And it's a superficial measurement of movement. If you take any wearable and you just go like this,
count that as a step,
all of a sudden you've done a bunch of steps. Mm. And let's say your body's run down. Whoop would recommend like a low strain day. Strain being, okay, what have you done to your body physiologically? What kind of intensity have you put on your body physiologically? A good thing to do when you run down might be to go for a long walk. Mm-hmm. Now, that would give you a lot of steps, right? So that's a physiologically low impact thing, but it gives you a high number. Let's take the flip side. Let's say you're peaking physically. A great thing to do would be to crush a weightlifting workout. Mm-hmm. Or ride a bike. Those are two activities that actually would give you no steps or practically none. And so there's this mismatch between what your body's prepared to do and how many steps you actually would take. And so we don't find steps particularly prescriptive. And then at the same time, there's a whole question around, are you actually even measuring steps if it's just movement? So if I just wave my arms around a lot on this podcast, I might have a big step day.
Yeah.
But that's not a super relevant metric for understanding your body. So Whoop was really founded around this principle of, we want to measure what's happening inside your body, right? And understand how we can give you feedback on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How many employees right now does Whoop have?
About 550.
And you're in charge of all of them? Well, in a sense.
I'm the CEO of Whoop, yeah.
Does that ever stress you out?
It's interesting. In maybe 2014 or so, in building the company, I was totally strung out. I had at that point raised about $20 million, which felt like a ton of money. I had maybe 20 people on my team, which felt like an enormous number of people. And I was totally overwhelmed figuring out how to run a company. And so I started really focusing on how I could improve as a CEO, how I could get more comfortable in the role. One thing I did is I learned how to meditate essentially developed.
How long did that take to learn it?
Well, technically speaking, it took 4 days. Now, meditation, I think, is a little bit more complicated than that, but I took a transcendental meditation course over 4 days, and they teach you how to meditate. Now, I think I was at a real low in my life, so to speak. So I also was willing to try new things and really take on new things. And I became, you know, obsessed with the idea of meditating every day. And so for the last 8-9 years now, I've done that every single day. And that's been one tool, so to speak, in my toolbox of how to manage stress, how to really be become a more thoughtful leader. I also, just by virtue of running Whoop and like thinking about Whoop data, found a number of things that helped me be a slightly better human, right? So making sure I'm exercising the right amount, making sure I go to bed and wake up at the same time. We can talk a lot about sleep, but like I've done all these things to really enhance my sleep and have it be very high quality sleep, which I think helps you manage stress.
What's your average sleep duration?
So I, on average, get about 7 hours of sleep on Whoop, which, you know, means I'm probably spending about 7.5 hours in bed. Mm. But of the 7 hours, I can now get about four plus of high quality REM sleep. So,
well, that's deep and REM, or yeah, just REM?
REM and slow wave sleep. So the restorative sleep.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah. So let's talk about sleep for half a second, and then I'll come back to managing a company. Like most people who don't measure their sleep, if you ask them how much sleep did you get last night, they'll be like, okay, well, I went to bed at 11. I woke up at 6. So I got 7 hours of sleep. Yeah, that's pretty good.
They overestimate.
Yeah. Now, as you and I both know, they spent 7 hours in bed. That does not mean they got 7 hours of quality sleep. And in fact, within the 7 hours in bed, they spent time awake, in light sleep, in REM sleep, and in slow wave sleep. Those are really the four stages. And awake and light are pretty much irrelevant. Like they have no profound effect on your body. REM and slow wave are enormously important periods for your body's recovery. So REM sleep is when your mind is repairing cognitively. Any human being needs that, especially someone who's trying to function in a job environment, learn. That's really when your brain is absorbing information. It's also when you have dreams. So for people who can't seem to remember dreams or don't know if they had dreams, they're probably not getting enough REM sleep. The second is slow wave sleep. And so especially for the folks listening to this podcast who are big into weightlifting, you have to get slow wave sleep. Like measuring your slow wave sleep is as important, if not more important, than measuring how much you're lifting. Because when you weightlift, you're actually breaking your muscles down. Mm-hmm. Slow wave sleep is when you're putting them back together. Slow wave sleep is when your body produces 95% of its human growth hormone. So if you're someone who gets 15 or 20 minutes of slow wave sleep a night versus 2.5-3 hours, and by the way, that's a totally reasonable range. If you've never measured your slow wave sleep, you might be on the low end, you might be on the high end, you might be somewhere in the middle. It's unlikely you're on the high end without figuring out how to optimize it. But if you can figure out how to optimize it, all of a sudden you're going to be getting stronger faster and feel a lot better. So back to the person who spent 7 hours in bed, they might be getting a total restorative sleep of an hour, even less, 30 minutes, or they could be getting 5 hours of restorative sleep. And all of everything in between depends on your lifestyle decisions, your genetics, certain behaviors you have. And we can talk more about certain ways to optimize for restorative sleep, but it's critically, critically important that you measure that period of time.
Yeah. I've noticed on the days where maybe I have had 7 hours sleep, but when the restorative sleep is 30, 45 minutes, the next day is a struggle.
Yeah,
I know
totally.
It's big time in the gym, like that there's no pump. I feel like my strength is down, and even my ability to really focus and to even push myself, it just feels like a massive struggle.
Absolutely. And going back to your question on stress, the more REM sleep you get, actually, it decreases your amygdala's response. So your amygdala is that part of your brain that's like fight or flight. It's what will trigger a response to stress. And so if you're getting more REM sleep, it also makes you calmer. So the combination of really learning how to meditate, improving my sleep. And then the last thing, which I would say is a little bit of a mindset. It was a mindset that I needed to get better a little bit every day, independent from the performance of the company. A lot of entrepreneurs, and I was in this bucket, wrap their identity up in their business's performance. So if your business is doing great today, you're doing great today, right? If your business is failing today, you're failing today. If your business is failing overall, you're a failure, right? Like, and that's not actually accurate, because there's certain things that you can do that are great independent of the business's performance. And it's unhealthy. Like, you can't be that tightly wound to a business that also has variables outside your control. So, the combination of meditating, sleeping better, good lifestyles, and then really focusing on what are things that I can do to be a little bit better have made running a company at 500, 600 people actually much more comfortable today. I'm much more comfortable today running this business than I was when I was 24 years old trying to manage 20 people.
Yeah.
And we've raised today $400 million. We're a multi-billion-dollar company. And then we were, maybe worth $20 or $40 million, right? And had far less people and had raised, far less capital. So it's actually less about the numbers and the size of these things. And it's a lot about the overall, I think, lifestyle and mindset.
Yeah. And when that announcement was made that Whoop was worth 3.6, 3.7 billion, like, did that make you feel? Because I'm sure a lot of people, when they find out that's how much the company is worth, I don't know, maybe some may be tempted to just celebrate and be like, oh my God, this is amazing. Let's go crazy. Let's party. Whereas with you, did you just think, okay, that's nice. Let's just continue. Let's just keep growing. Real quick, guys, I just want to share with you something which I spent the end of 2023 putting together for you. You see, in life, if you are unhappy with something, you need to change it. That is one of the core philosophies that has driven me, my businesses, and my fitness over the past 10 years. In recent years, I've been asked frequently how I've managed to go from being an average personal trainer, working all day, every day in a gym in the north of England, to the position that I am in today. That is why I decided to create the Digital Playbook. This is a step-by-step blueprint for anybody who finds themselves in the same position that I did years ago, wondering to myself, how can I make money online? Can I really make a full-time income from creating content about the things that I actually like? How can I travel the world, work from my laptop, and at the same time still afford to live a great lifestyle? It's essentially a playbook on how I built multi-million pound businesses off the back of creating content online. If you want to check it out, head over to thedigitalplaybook.net and you can book in a call with my team to find out more. Let's get back to the episode.
I mean, it's certainly a great milestone in the company's history. And one thing that it seems entrepreneurs don't talk that much about is when your business increases a lot in value, you're actually making a lot of money for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And that's your team, your employee base, and also investors who believed in you years ago when, by the way, most people didn't believe in you. I mean, I've been rejected way more times than people have said, I believe in this.
Is this when you were trying to raise money to begin with?
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many rounds of financing I've done over the years, but every time you try to raise capital, more people say no than yes. In fact, at some stages, I probably had 30 people say no for every one person who said yes. So being able to demonstrate that you're creating shareholder value, that's probably the piece that I got the most excitement out of from just that headline. Like, it was knowing that the people who believed in me, who came along on this journey, who believed in our mission, are seeing the huge upside now. That makes me very proud. The headline of like, I run a very valuable business. Things like that, I think, are a little bit less relevant. Once you've gotten into that mindset of how do you get a little better every day, because that just becomes an endless pursuit, you know. And that, I think, in a good way, doesn't let you get complacent. There's something interesting about the human brain that is pretty misunderstood by entrepreneurs. And I didn't fully understand this when I was even younger. Most entrepreneurs are running almost exclusively on a dopamine system, right? So dopamine makes you happy, but it also makes you really motivated. And the way the system works is you say to yourself, if I can just get to this point in time or this milestone, it's going to be this enormous milestone, and therefore I'm going to be happy, or it's going to unlock all of this whatever in my life. And because you've elevated the significance of that milestone, your drive to get to that is actually very high. It's a dopamine system that's motivating you. But where you see entrepreneurs burn out, even successful entrepreneurs burn out, is that they're exclusively running on that system. And the problem with exclusively running on that system is when you get to that milestone, it's not as big of a deal as you told yourself it was. And so there's this huge letdown.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you have to pick yourself back up and is coming up with some further milestone.
A new goal.
And so again, dopamine system, and you're just running on a wheel. The secret I've found is balancing the dopamine system with gratitude. And so if you can appreciate the progress that you've made along the way and be able to pause and be present and like focus on the significance of what you've accomplished, that in turn produces serotonin, which is another phenomenon in your brain that makes you happy. And serotonin is great too. There's a sort of a misperception that if you are appreciating too much of where you are or where you've gotten, you might become complacent and not get to the next thing. And that's actually just not true. Like, gratitude and complacency are very different things. So what's helped me keep driving the business forwards while also, I think, trying to stay grounded is, again, balancing the dopamine system of future milestones with gratitude for everything that we've accomplished together.
Yeah. And in the early stages, when you're recruiting staff to begin with, obviously it's a small team, how or what do you do to try and allow them to work in a happy workplace and to motivate them to put in their best effort when it comes to running the company? Because I think even with myself, I mean, I must have 7 staff at the moment.
Sure.
But I want all of them to be putting their best effort in. So what is it that you do to help your team and motivate them to perform at their best to help grow the company?
I think a lot of it's being very mission-driven with your company or your culture. Fortunately for Whoop, the mission of unlocking human performance and improving health, that's a very compelling and motivating mission. And you can't really repeat it enough, right? You have to keep banging that drumbeat. Hey, this is what we're about. This is why we're here. All the work that we do here is to help people improve their health. And then also back it up by showing how we're improving people's health. Every Friday, we have a team lunch. A lot of those team meetings, which have been over Zoom for the last couple of years, but a lot of those team meetings, I'll read customer feedback that we've gotten. And, you know, it'll be a user who lost 80 pounds using Whoop or just achieved a new PR in lifting, or literally Whoop saved their life, quote for them. Like, and that, for me personally is about as motivating as anything I can read or see, because it demonstrates, wow, all this hard work that we're driving towards and doing is making an impact. Like, we're seeing it for our customers, and that in turn also creates a great business, but it just does an incredibly good thing in the world. And so I think the more authentic and repetitive your mission is, the more motivated your team will be.
Mm. And I've noticed the moment I've kind of transitioned into selling physical products, that comes with some potential downsides. And like you mentioned before, there's a lot of things which are genuinely out of control. So say, for example, me with the clothing, sometimes I would get deliveries from the factory and the sizing was completely messed up, or they screwed up on the color of the shorts. And that's just completely almost ruined my marketing and what I had planned for that product release. And I noticed, I think it was when the Whoop 4 was released. Obviously, I got it sent to me. I did a review. I was telling everyone, oh my God, look at this. It's so amazing. Like, all you guys should definitely invest in getting one for yourself. So everyone was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to buy one. And then they'd sign up for the Whoop 4. But then it said that they wouldn't get it for like 7 or 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So what was it that happened with the supply chain when the Whoop 4 was released?
It was actually a really painful process. As everyone's aware, I mean, there was enormous supply chain disruptions from COVID. And in August, September timeframe, we were announcing the new Whoop 4.0, which we've been working on for 2 years. We were super excited about it. It's a product we've been testing for a long time. And we make this big announcement. We did the Whoop Unlocked, which is a, you know, pretty cool hour-long show where we talk about new technology, what the Whoop 4 can do. And then after we've announced it, we discover that essentially one of our core components we no longer had the supply of that we thought. And as a consequence, we had to scramble to find another version, so to speak, of that component. Now, people look at a Whoop strap and they see a lot of material and a fairly lightweight, small thing. And they think, okay, how complicated could that be? It has 150 components inside of it. And those are sourced all around the world from all different parties. And if you have 149 of those components, you can make zero Whoop straps.
Yeah.
So that was the very painful lesson that we learned launching the Whoop 4. And we tried to do a lot of things to be right by our members. We tried to be as transparent as possible about what the delays would be. We even gave people who had a meaningful delay a free month on Whoop. So we did a bunch of things. I think ultimately it was quite a bad experience for our members. And, you know, I take responsibility for that. The good news is today we're shipping within a day. So, you know, those supply chain challenges are behind us. And then I think from just a business standpoint, there's an aspect of like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And we certainly learned an enormous amount about forecasting, planning, supply chain from that one very painful experience.
Was that the worst time frame for you where you thought, okay, this is an absolute nightmare? Or was there actually a point where you thought Whoop was going to fail?
There were a lot of periods years earlier in the company's evolution where it was pretty challenging and it was hard to raise capital. And there were at least two or three points in time where Whoop was very close to running out of money. And this was before we had become a well-known consumer brand. We were still, you know, what I would call a very cool technology company that had, you know, high performance athletes and like this sort of interesting mystique about it. but it wasn't yet a revenue generating business. And for those reasons, it was pretty hard to attract capital.
And you just basically didn't see failure as an option. You just kept going and going and going.
Totally. I think that I mean, this is a little bit of a mindset thing, but I think that failure is completely overrated in really every way. It's become a little bit romanticized, I think, in the wrong way. Like, I think it's very important to not let fear of failure prevent you from doing something. You know, let's say you're incredibly passionate about starting a product or a service, but you're afraid to fail. Okay, that's a bad relationship with failure. You want to overcome the fear of failure. But to go out and then do it and then to fail is ultimately not great. It would be much better if you succeeded. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I actually at one point went through the process of literally writing an email to our investors. Obviously, I didn't send it. That was like, whoop, it failed. And so I felt the emotion of what it was like to fail. And it felt so horrible. Like, I was in such a dark place about it. And fortunately, we pulled through, and the company obviously now is enormously successful. But I think if the company had failed, I would have learned a lot of the wrong lessons. I would have learned that the technology we tried to build was too ambitious and to try to get to market faster in the future. I would have learned that you should try to build a less capital intensive business. I might have even learned that you want to recruit less people and have a smaller team and be, you know, more nimble. And yet, just by pushing through that you know, sort of last 1%, that very, like, the most painful of the period of pain, just by pushing through that, I can now look back on it as, no, we were right to be really ambitious. We were right that this technology was needed in the world, and it was just hard to build, and it was going to take years and years to build. Because look at the impact that's now having. Another nuance I would say is that rejection is probably a good thing. And rejection and failure are sort of different things. But rejection is almost like a question of reps. Some people, I think, conflate the two. So it's okay to be rejected by a bunch of investors. It's okay to, you know, go after that amazing hire that you want to bring on your team and then maybe not have it work out, right? So today I've almost removed failure from my vocabulary, in the sense that, you know, it's really not something I think all that much about.
And during this time period where you've had your ups and your downs, have you found that you've always been surrounded by supportive people? So friends, family, even relationships, or have, let's say, for example, there have been periods of your life where you've been so focused on your work that you have had to sacrifice your social life or even relationships? Like, have you ever had to end a relationship because they were just unhappy that you weren't spending enough of your time with them?
You know, it's a great question. I think it's also one benefit to starting Whoop when I was really young. You know, people will tell young people, oh, this is a really risky time to start something. You haven't built your career yet, XYZ. But actually, very early on in your life, you may also have less needs, so to speak. Like, I don't have kids yet. I'm fortunately married. My wife's been very supportive in the evolution of building Whoop. So that's been a very important relationship.
When did you get married?
4 years ago. Yeah. And I've been with my wife for now 9 years. So she's actually seen a lot of the journey. And my parents have been, I would say, supportive for me in building the business, at least like emotionally supportive, right? And at the same time, you do have to know that there's a lot of sacrifice that's going to come from trying to create something in the world that doesn't exist. Like, you are not entitled to build something new and innovative, right? You have to break through to do that. And there's a fair amount of sacrifice that comes with that. I think enormous, there's an enormous work ethic required. There's an, you know, I can't tell you how many weddings I've missed of my, you know, of close friends, how many, you know, trips I've had to decline the last minute, like things like that, are sort of just like a, almost a basic, I think you have to expect will come with trying to pursue that thing. But at the same time, it's an enormously rewarding pursuit. And at least for me personally, I learned at a young age that something I told myself I really wanted to do, I was going to be very motivated to do. And I think a lot of people are like that, where if they can really figure out a mission or a problem that they want to solve, they can really drive towards it.
So now do you allocate time, whether it be during the week or during the year, where you're like, I'm going to not do any work. I'm just going to relax, enjoy, whatever that might be. How often would you do that? Would you say now?
I certainly try to, you know, like I'll go away with my wife, a few times through the year. And
can you switch off?
And
fully?
I've gotten a lot better at it. I would still like, by virtue of wearing the product 24/7 too, it's not like an enterprise software business, which I can kind of like tuck out of my mind. It is, you know, it's actively in my life. And that's fine. You know, like, again, I really enjoy building the company and thinking about the company. I think over the years too, I've been able to build a management team that is running the business, right? And so that's a lot of the goal as well for any entrepreneur building a company, is you want to surround yourself with people who are more talented than you are in their particular field and empower them, right? So
are you able to do that now that you've got yourself to such a position of success and status? Are you finding it difficult to be surrounded by people who are more successful than you? Because I've found this issue as I've been on the come up, you know, whether it be in terms of how much money I'm generating, the following which I have, I've found it difficult to be around people who are more successful than me, if you know what I mean. I outpaced a lot of my friends and found that, okay, well, actually I'm not being big-headed or anything, but I am now the most successful person here out of all my friendship groups. And now I'm actively trying to seek other people to, you know, just spend time with. So for you, are you able to continuously meet these ultra successful people, or does it become a little bit more difficult?
I think I've always valued meeting successful people, and listening to them, learning from them. I mean, even launching the Whoop podcast has been an interesting foray in that, where I host a podcast that goes out every week, and we talk about, I'll interview someone super successful who also happens to wear Whoop. And often I'm pleasantly surprised by people who wear Whoop. So it could be professional athletes, it could be doctors, business leaders, executives, you name it. And so that's actually been one very fascinating way for me to get to know someone. I was speaking about sort of a slightly different phenomenon, which is in building a team, right? You really want to find people that you trust to tell you what to do in their category, right? Because you won't find a CEO who's the best product person and the best marketing person and the best salesperson and the best engineer and the best data scientist. Like, right? It just doesn't, that person doesn't exist. And so you want to go out and then try to find the best of each of those categories. And then what I also think about is, then how do you create an environment in which they work really effectively together, right? Mm-hmm. And that the latter part is actually harder than people think it is. You know, sometimes super talented people bump heads and don't work cohesively. So finding really talented people, empowering them, and creating an environment in which they work really closely together is a lot of my job.
Yeah. But is there any thing now in terms of skill set which you're trying to build or improve upon? Or has it got to the point where if you aren't good at something, you just outsource it and let somebody else take care of that? Because I guess now being a CEO, your main focus should just be to master the art of running and growing a business.
Yeah, and a lot of that's recruiting. A lot of that's knowing which problems to go deep on yourself versus to delegate. A lot of that is continuing to attract capital and taking the business to the next stage. So it's being really mindful of how I spend my time and making sure I'm focused on the right deliverables. But I think I have a great team, a great board of directors, you know, people around me, checks and balances that help identify where I'm spending my time.
What would the biggest piece of advice be to upcoming entrepreneurs? Because I'm sure there's a lot of younger people watching this podcast who maybe they have an idea, maybe they want to start their own business. What piece of advice would you give to them?
I mean, keep going. That's been the biggest soundtrack in the back of my mind. Like, through all the difficult times, like, just keep going. You got to keep pushing through. And it can be really discouraging building a business. You'll have a lot of doubt. You'll have a lot of people tell you you're wrong or you shouldn't do it this way or you're going to fail. And along the way, you have to learn how to build some resilience towards that negativity or towards that discomfort. And I did that in part by wearing Whoop, in part by building Whoop. And, you know, thinking about what are the things that make me tick. But I think it's important to have some introspection around that as well. You're trying to build two things when you start a business or a company. You're trying to start the thing, but then you're also trying to create the future version of you that's going to be able to run the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, day one entrepreneur is not the same person 10 years later. And you want to make sure you really like that person 10 years later and you grow into being the person who can oversee a large business.
Yeah. I think looking back at particularly the past few years, I have not been the person that should be or could be in charge of a big company. But over the past 6 months, at least, there's been quite a significant change. And now I'm doing everything that I need to do to help me become that person that I want to be in the future.
Well, that's great. First of all, I think another challenge that you face is that you're both the individual contributor and the manager. Mm-hmm. At various stages in a business life, the percent of time that you spend being the individual contributor versus the manager really shifts. You know, today, I very rarely should be the individual contributor on something. Maybe raising capital, maybe like recruiting a very specific person. But for the most part, I'm not the individual contributor. I've got people or teams that are working on solving the problems, right? And in fact, where a lot of CEOs get themselves in trouble is they try to go too deep on something at a stage where they need to be a little more hands off. And so over time, for me, it's been learning, how do you delegate more? How do you empower more? What are really the specific things that you want to understand or ask or push on to get the results? And so back to you, like, you have to be the individual contributor because you're also the face of this company that you're building. And so much of being the face is creating this content and doing all the workouts and these things. But that puts a pressure on you to also be the manager because you're splitting your time so profoundly. Imagine if you were managing the talent and you weren't the talent yourself. How much free time would you have to be a manager?
Yeah.
Right? An enormous amount. So that's where it's hard to be too tough on yourself over that. I think the important thing is just to be aware of it.
Yeah. I think time management is something which I've learned a lot about, particularly because there's literally so many things which I could potentially be doing. I've just had to sit down and think, okay, these are the things which I need to be doing. I can outsource these other jobs for other people to do. And then I think scheduling has been a big thing for me, which has helped to improve just getting things done which need to be done.
Yeah, it's probably another thing I would emphasize to aspiring entrepreneurs listening to this. Excuse me. One other thing I'd mentioned to aspiring entrepreneurs listening to this is just the incredible importance of focus. And you really can't overstate it. Like, the more focused you are on building a product, on finding a person, on your customers, like, the better. It's going to be so easy along the way to say, oh, I can do that. I can do this. I can do that. I can do this. And I've been guilty of that over the years too, where it's like, you know, you see something and you think because you've been successful at this, maybe you can go into a new market or test a new product or something. But at the end of the day, what I always have learned is that you got to say no to a lot of things to really focus on that one, two, three things that you've said yes to. And that applies to your time. It especially applies to your team's time, making sure that your team is able to stay focused, not putting too many different things on their plate, not having too many different goals and assignments. So focus, focus, focus.
Awesome. So I'm sure there's a lot of exciting things which are happening with Whoop, which you probably can't disclose too much of at the moment. But to everyone watching, and I know I get this asked this question quite a lot, people are like, well, why should I go for Whoop? You know, why not go for the other competitors like the Oura Ring, Apple Watch, whatever it might be? What would you say to those people to try and convince them that Whoop is the product which you need and is going to be best for you?
Totally. I think the core value proposition is if you wear Whoop, it will help you change your behavior and improve your health. And no other product on the market, I think, does that as well as Whoop. So you're going to identify things about your lifestyle, about your behavior that you want to shift or change. It's going to give you a very easy way to understand data. And it's a subscription, by the way. So if you don't like it, you can cancel. I mean, you literally can sign up for Whoop today for $30. And we send you an expensive piece of hardware in the mail for free as part of that subscription. So you never even pay for the hardware. Mm-hmm. It's just on a monthly basis. So what I think Whoop offers is, one, this real focus on behavior change and health improvement, and two, a business model that punishes us if we don't achieve that, right? Like, at the end of the day, we believe we have to deliver value to you every day, every week, every month, every year. Otherwise, you shouldn't be a Whoop member. And that's part of what's also unique about Whoop is that business model.
So where can people find you on socials? Your Instagram, the Whoop podcast?
Yeah, so you can just find me online at Will Ahmed, WILLAHMED. And you can check out Whoop at Whoop. You can check out at Whoop at Whoop.com. I host the Whoop podcast, which has a couple episodes recently that were more about the history of Whoop, if you're more interested in the history of Whoop. But we also put out a ton of content on weightlifting, recovery, performance, sleep, some of the statistics that we talked about today, heart rate variability, and others. So I would check out the Whoop podcast too.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I know you're very busy. So thank you very much for coming down. I've learned a lot.
Thanks for having me, man.